Okay, I'm gonna let you in on a Williams family inside joke. I don't know about y'all, but we have a habit of naming our cars. Actual names. It's like a dinner table joke. And the name, it just has to come to you. It has to feel right. Nobody else can assign the name for you. So my first car in high school that I ripped up and down the roads of Huntsville on was a hopped up 68 Mustang. I named it Thunderfoot, which probably tells you a lot about how I drove. My son, he used to have a bright yellow Ford Ranger in his teen years. He named it Del Sol. My daughter used to drive a Jeep Cherokee. She named it Spirit. Over the years, I had multiple Jeeps, trucks with names like Hooch and Big Red and Trigger. They gotta reflect something you see in the vehicle and something you like and sort of feel like the flavor is there, right? I mean, it's a game for us, really. So now, though, I drive a white Jeep Gladiator. A Gladiator, I say. Therefore, its name must be, you guessed it, Maximus. Or more formally known as Maximus Decimus Meridius the Jeep. Oh, yeah. So let me flip the script here. Why would I name my Jeep Gladiator Maximus? Well, I mean, if you have to ask that question, you must not be a fan of one of the best movies ever made. Ridley Scott and Russell Crowe's Gladiator. So it was one of those epic movies with expansive vistas and well-developed characters, a movie about leadership, about courage, about justice. I mean, if you read between the lines, so to speak, you'll also find, too, it's a tale of a civilization in decline. So there's one epic scene in the movie when the main character, Maximus, who has been betrayed, lost his family, lost his freedom. He was sold into slavery, had to fight in the arena as a gladiator. He has a chance to finally confront the failed leader, Emperor Commodus, his enemy. In one of those movie lines that becomes a part of pop culture, he slowly turned, he took off his helmet, and he shocked the corrupt emperor by saying, "My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the armies of the North, general of the Felix Legions, loyal servant to the true emperor, Marcus Aurelius. Father to a murdered son, husband to a murdered wife, and I will have my vengeance in this life or the next." It was one of those moments that goes down in movie history, and I'm pretty sure there's not a man alive who hasn't quoted that in some kind of a sidebar conversation. In one fell swoop in the movie, the character of Maximus, he laid claim to being an actual leader who had fought for the empire, someone who had been maligned and mistreated by his own government, someone who was willing to take action to correct the downward spiral of his own government, and that his emperor, Commodus, was not the true emperor. He immediately became a marked man. Well, the movie is actually very loosely based on historical grounds. There was, in fact, a corrupt Emperor Commodus. The arena was real. Those who dared to speak out against the corrupt leadership of Rome, they were often abused or killed. And the Roman Empire, it did, in fact, decline. It declined to the point that what was once considered the greatest empire in the history of the world pretty much vanished. Only the great ruins and the fractured separate nations remain one of the history's greatest mass governments. But how does a civilization from which we gather up just so much of our Western culture, how does it just go away? How is it possible that an entire culture can fall? And did it fall from outside influences only, or did it fall from within? It was actually both. External and internal forces became prime factors in the fall of Rome. All of them combined to create the massive decline of the internal workings of Rome itself. Now, historians to this day wrestle with what the elements were that were the causation for Rome's final fall. I mean, there's written records, there's archaeological evidence, but still, the debate goes on as to what it was that created the evil recipe that became the disaster of Rome's fall from grace. But there's a few key things, though, that historians do agree on. And I got to tell you, when I read the list and I begin to compare to things that I see going on right here at home in America, as a nation, I get the eerie feeling the fall of Rome is some sort of deja vu. We could take the same list of contributing causes that historians do agree on for the fall of Rome, and we could say that we are seeing them now in what, if we don't stop it, could one day be called the fall of America. Yeah, so I hope I got your attention now. You may be asking yourself, all right, so what are they? What's the list? That was ancient history. How could it apply to us? Well, here are just a few of those factors that led to the fall of the great Roman Empire. Just listen to what it says and compare. All right, one of the most prevalent theories is the weakening of the Roman society by mass migration of peoples across Europe. peoples who were seeking out another location to live. Literally, whole tribes and subcultures just up and moved and occupied the territories of Rome and began to draw from Rome's resources without any predicate or permission. Some would say that Rome no longer had borders and that the lack of cohesion or the Romans' say-so over who was and who was not occupying space within the empire's borders, it caused a massive degradation of logistical and national capabilities. The Roman Empire was actually very diverse. Nations kept their cultures, but they also adopted and assimilated into Roman culture. But the mass migration that came in waves, they did not assimilate. They just occupied. Sound familiar? Right now, we are seeing literally millions per year flooding across our southern border unchecked. I mean, not that we're a closed nation, not at all. I mean, we're not the hermit kingdom of North Korea, but yet we are a nation. And a nation without borders ceases to be a geographic or even political entity if such mass migration goes on unchecked. Another of the factors that contributed to the fall of Rome is what is referred to as the weakening of the Roman legions. For most of its history, Rome's military was the envy of the ancient world. But during the decline, the makeup of the once mighty legions began to change. Unable to recruit enough soldiers from in their own citizenry, emperors like Diocletian and Constantine, they began hiring foreign mercenaries to help prop up their armies. The ranks of the legions eventually swelled with Germanic Goths and other barbarians, so much so that Romans began using the Latin word barbarus in place of soldier. But these mercenaries, they also had little or no loyalty to the empire itself. And many of the barbarians who sacked the city of Rome later and brought down the Western Empire, they had learned their military skills while serving in the Roman legions. Right now, the U.S. military is in a difficult spot. Still the envy of the world, but we are nonetheless 23% down in recruiting and we're unable to man the force under current force projections. The U.S. military right now is the smallest in its overall force structure in nearly 100 years. But wars and geopolitical conflicts rage across the globe nonetheless. We saw the massive self-inflicted loss of nearly 18% of the National Guard and Reserve forces due to ill-planned COVID mandates, liberal mandates, social experimentation foisted on the ranks, and leadership who bows to so-called threats like climate change while not even focusing on true warfighting skills. Deja vu. The weakening of the Legion. The weakening of the U.S. military. Now, there's multiple other on the list of causes that contributed to the fall of Rome, but let me just give you a couple more. One of them was massive government overexpansion and overspending. At its height, the Roman Empire stretched from the Atlantic Ocean to the Euphrates River, but the growth of the government sector became far too bloated and corrupt, and the levels of spending to maintain this growth became unsustainable. Right now, here today in America, those in charge of our nation have spent and spent and spent, and they have grown the size of government to levels never before seen in our nation's history. The national debt is at a level that no one would have imagined a mere 30 years ago. Have we reached a level of unsustainability? It's arguable. But we are, at the very least, I can say, staring at inflation and market indicators that have not been seen in over 40 years, and I can't help but think, deja vu. The fall of the Roman economy, the fall of the American economy. Then there was the polarized government. So Rome grew in size and scope to the point that governance was increasingly difficult. Factions arose, tempers flared, they were polarized, government was often dysfunctional. At a time when strong leadership was needed to unify Rome's interests and to bring its governance back to stability, the people were given the feckless leadership of Emperor Diocletian, who thought that it would be easier, to divide Rome and create the Eastern and the Western empires. So with an absence of unifying culture and unifying sense of purpose, and with divided leadership, Rome did not become stronger, it became weaker. Its enemies sensed it. Its enemies could see what was happening. So Rome suffered invasions and attacks from a world that had grown weary of the great Rome and saw an opportunity to capitalize on the degraded and divided status of the divided Rome. The Western Empire collapsed in 476 BC. The Eastern Empire became the Byzantine Empire. It did last another 1,000 years before it was finally wiped out by the Ottoman Turks. And the Roman Empire was gone. Now, we have not reached that point yet. I want to be real clear. We have not reached that point yet, but we are in a nation polarized by feckless leadership. Leadership that seems determined somehow to divide us rather than unify us. And our enemies across the world, they know it. They can smell it. When is the last time you remember ragtag Houthis shooting missiles at U.S. ships or Iran threatening to strike U.S. interests? World leaders don't return our leadership's phone calls sometimes. Tension is there with some of our longest-running alliances. But we have not collapsed. Not by far. There's still time. We don't have to make this a full-on deja vu. But I see the polarization and the divide of Rome, and I see elements of that now in our current status on the world stage. So yeah, I see these indicators, and I look at history, and I realize that the fact that I love this nation, this state, my community, it means that I am willing to stand. I am. Like many of you, I am willing to take a stand. We have to. I don't want to be a blot on history that makes future generations wonder. I don't ever want there to be a time that future historians debate what it was that caused the fall of America. There's the old adage that those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. Well, I'm telling you, the history of the world continues to add clues to the downfall of the great Roman Empire, and we should learn those lessons. We should internalize them, and we should resolve as a people to not make the same mistakes again. And if you think about it, there's nobody out there naming their Jeep Commodus. Maximus Decimus Meridius, commander of the Felix Legions, generals of the armies of the North, that's for me. We can still do it. That's my philosophy.